Welcome, listeners, to another episode of Sportsbill, where today we are switching things up a bit. As many of you know, we are hugely passionate about championing women's sports across all areas, from increasing media coverage of elite athletes to helping encourage young girls to just want to try and take up exercise in some form. This week, we are delighted to be joined by two women who have a very similar vision, especially when it comes to the latter, and are making fantastic strides to try and make a difference. We Are Girls in Sport was born in early 2020 with the aim of giving girls a sporting chance. Its founders, Jo Wimblegroves and Caroline King, want to encourage the return of a willingness to try amongst young girls and women, a willingness to try new things, and the opportunities to try new things and sports that aren't just stereotypically seen as girl sports, but across the board, whether that be cricket, paddleboarding, windsurfing, rock climbing, you name it. All they want is for girls to have the opportunity and the willingness to give these things a try. So sit back and relax for the next 45 to 50 minutes. It's a fantastic episode and you'll get the chance to learn all about their visions and their goals for this fantastic company. So I was wondering, first of all, if you could just explain a little bit more about what We Are Girls in Sport are, how it came about and that sort of thing, because it's really interesting to hear from what I've read so far.
So Jo and I have both got different reasons as to why we are collaborating. But I'd say for me, it's because I actually have two sons. I don't have daughters. I have two sons. And whilst reading stories to them at bedtime, I just realized that they are so, those stories often feature male sports people, and they are very targeted at boys. If you walk into a bookshop or if you walk into a newsagent, there's a plethora of books and magazines, but a lot of them are featuring traditionally male sports. And it just made me think, what's out there for girls? What's out there for the little me, you know, when I was a little girl, that would have shown me some role models and made me want to get involved in sport. So I put my thinking cap on, and Jo and I had met several years before, and I remembered how much she was passionate about girls and giving girls confidence and sport as well, and how that can help. And so we got together and We Are Girls in Sport was born. As time's gone on, we've kind of realized what our key objectives are, and there are three of those. So the first one, as I said, is really to improve the coverage of women and girls in sport. And we think it's really important to feature girls as well as kind of celebrity sportswomen that you see at the Olympics or you see at Wimbledon, like the Serena Williams. But it's really important to feature the girls as well, because they are the ones that show other girls that it's doable, that you can go out and try a new sport and be successful. And you don't have to be an Olympian to be successful. It could just be that you're achieving, you know, your PB, which is something I'm very passionate about, that everybody can achieve a PB. And, you know, you can try new sports, try new things. That's our first objective, is to improve coverage. And we do that via our blogs, where we're trying to showcase lots of different sports. Number two, it's trying to show to those girls that there are more sports out there than perhaps they are shown at school. So it's not just netball and rounders, although they are now being girls, more girls are playing, you know, rugby and cricket, but there are so many thousands of sports out there, from brisk walking, you know, marathon walking, which is an Olympic event, to much more extreme sports. And so we are trying to say to girls, don't just be narrow, like, tunnel vision on what sport means to you. It can mean all sorts. And also, it doesn't necessarily have to be a sport. It could just be exercise and activity. And then the third objective is to encourage girls to pursue their sporting ambitions through what I call the tricky teenage years. So there is a drop-off rate when girls hit puberty worldwide when it comes to sport. And what we want to do is say to girls, carry on going through those, through adolescence, and you will reap the benefits, both mental and physical, And you'll carry those benefits through with you into adulthood. So the skills that you learn on the pitch, you will take into the boardroom. You know, the way that you become more resilient will help you in later life when you face challenges. Once you get into the habit of doing sport and feeling physically well, that habit will just continue throughout your life, and it will help us combat the obesity crisis, you know, general well-being. We've already heard about COVID and how if you're fitter and more physically fit, you know, that you're more likely to be able to combat. So all those elements are what we want to try and encourage girls to do. I hope that was clear.
Definitely clear. Something you actually said right at the start of your answer really surprised me as such, because we've spoken to a lot of people. We've spoken to our friends at Totally Runnable, and we've spoken to the Women Who Sport podcast, and they've both said about how women just don't get the media coverage, and they don't get the column inches and things like that. And a lot of people are targeting change in those areas and getting more women's sport on TV and getting more women's sport talked about on social media. But interestingly there, you said reading stories to your sons and magazines and things like that. That's really interesting. And do you think that's almost in some ways those areas that are still actually very influential on young people are getting left behind because we're just focusing on more of the digital aspect?
I mean, I think there is an element of that, but we've got to remember that, you know, young girls are not necessarily on social media until they hit 13, by which time you might have already lost them when it comes to sport. So what Joe and I are passionate about is sort of getting to them earlier with the role models and with the media. And we appreciate that, you know, even as adults, people consume media in very different ways, whether you buy a Sunday paper or you read it digitally or you listen to it on the radio or you read it on your app, you know. So there are lots of different ways for girls to absorb this information. But when it comes to that age of where your parents are reading stories to you, you know, there aren't many, many magazines out there which are targeting female, well, there aren't any female role models. And when it comes to stories, so I was reading to my sons, you know, stories about footballers. And I'm not saying that a girl cannot, you know, read that story about Raheem Sterling or Marcus Rashford or whoever, but it's not necessarily a role model for her to think, I can do that. I could be that famous person or that famous footballer, you know. I can pursue my goal, excuse the pun. So, you know, that's kind of what we are really passionate about.
Shall I dive in here? Because I can tell you a bit about when I first met Caroline and we sat down and she was telling me about these books that she's reading to her sons. And I've got an almost 11-year-old daughter, and she started playing rugby when she was 5. And what's really interesting is that even now, you know, they've only got 3 of them in their squad that's left. You know, there's such a this sort of drop off in sport or in rugby in general, or maybe they haven't got enough girls coming to the club, this new wave of girls that need to start playing. And every time we go to a bookshop and my daughter thinks, right, who is a rugby role model for my 10-year-old daughter? It doesn't exist yet. You know, those books aren't there. She's just been at the Kent Cricket Trials, which she loved. And again, any inspirational figures that she could pick up in a book or a magazine, they just don't seem to be visible to her. And, you know, we want to make all this visible, and we have come together to share our voice in order to bring that forward. And there's such a lovely story that I told Caroline when we first met about when my daughter was 7 years old, and she was playing for her local rugby team. And the head coach, really lovely chap, you know, and men are a huge part of this conversation as well. And he was a real ambassador for the girls that were at his club. And he said to me that something really special had happened at the club that he had actually noticed. And he said to me that for the first time in the history of the club, which is almost 100 years, they finally had enough girls in under sevens to put a team together. It had never happened in 100 years. And he made a point of coming to me directly and saying, Joe, I know how passionate you are on this subject. I knew that if I didn't mention it, you'll never talk to me again. Because he did not want that opportunity to be passed by. And that was the first year that he took an all-girl team to the Kent festivals, which was fantastic. The interesting thing was is that when they got there, there was no other girls team for them to play against, so they were lined up against the boys all arm in arm, and these young boys were a bit like, what's going on? But it was such a great experience for them. And I think about what she learned on that pitch that day, the matches that they won, the matches that they lost, learning how to use their skills and coming away, even at 7 years old, learning some really important skills on where her strengths were, where she said, you know, I was tagging, but tagging is important, Mum, but I should have been going for the try line. Iris and I are quickest up the wing. That's what we should have been doing. How to understand that sort of play at a young age. And this is where Caroline and I were saying, you know, if we tried to catch them at 11 or 13 years old, not that it's too late, but if we can introduce them to sports from a really young age, and we read those stories to them from 5 years old about the different spectrum of sports that they could possibly try. And, you know, that's such an important conversation that I think will come up in this podcast, is it all starts with a willingness to try.
It's interesting to note there that you're saying about the number of girls at the under sevens being able to put out a full team and things like that. And one thing I've noticed having a very sporty sister is that when girls are that age, sort of 5, 6, 7, they can often be found out in the garden kicking a ball with their brothers, or they can be found, they're going to cricket courses. I mean, I've coached on a few cricket courses and there've been loads of girls aged sort of 7, 8, 9. But then when it does get to that 11, 12, 13, there is that significant drop off. Do you know, if, have you sort of discovered any particular reasons to why that is the case? Or is it just simply because they're not caught and hooked in the way that maybe boys are, because of those sort of role models and things that are shoved in their face when they are sort of 7, 8, 9?
Well, we know that self-confidence takes, you know, plays a really important part in all this, because, you know, when girls hit puberty and adolescence, you know, their bodies are changing and they start to think about their bodies in a different way. So it's making sure that the people that are around them, whether it's their coaches, whether it's their parents or caregivers, are able to help them navigate that period. And also, not just that, it's about, you know, helping them to understand, you know, the strength within their bodies. And I think it's difficult as well with social media. There's been lots of really positive campaigns around the strong, not skinny, and that girls have to look a certain way. And there's always this thing of, am I good enough? We've had some really interesting conversations with athletes at a young age where they feel like, you know, there's always someone better than you. There's always someone that's faster than you. But as Caroline keeps alluding to, you know, finding your own personal best is such a massive part of where sport can be enjoyed and enjoyed through those tricky teenage years. So I think self-confidence plays a really big part in it, but also helping girls to know that it's okay to get sweaty, it's okay to look a certain way, it's okay to know that you've trained hard and you've worked hard, and not to feel embarrassed by that.
I mean, I also think that, you know, like as you've just said yourself, Will, that you were coaching girls. And I think sometimes, I mean, that's brilliant, but I think sometimes if girls are lacking self-confidence, they feel inhibited by men, and they might want female coaches, and there just aren't enough female coaches coming through. So I think that's something that we need to focus on, and it's kind of, where are those coaches going to come from if we don't start getting them involved in the sport now? I don't think it's because girls don't like sport that they don't carry on through puberty. It's all those things that Jo just talked about. It's the lack of confidence. It's wanting to conform when you're going through puberty, or going through adolescence, and wanting to be, you know, like everybody else, to fit in. You're trying to work out where you fit in. And a lot of our blog subjects that we speak to, they will talk about that battle of conformity. And, you know, their friends might be dropping out of sport because they've got boyfriends, or sometimes because they want to focus on their schoolwork, or just because they just don't want to get sweaty and be seen to be active. And they, all of these people have had a battle at some point where they've had to make a decision and go, I'm going to carry on with my sport. And they might do it in a more subtle way, a little bit, you know, under the radar, might not make such a big deal of it anymore that they're winning competitions, because they don't want to be singled out as different. But, you know, it's quite complex, I think, what girls go through. But the lack of role models, self-confidence, you know, they are big factors.
Just to add to that as well, Will, we had a really interesting interview with Rocky Clark, who you might know as one of the most capped, you know, England rugby players, absolutely phenomenal woman. We really enjoyed chatting to her. And she was talking about when she was in her teenage years, and even at school, she felt like she wasn't the same shape as everybody else. She wasn't the same height as everybody else. Her body was a different shape. And, you know, she felt like she didn't always fit in. However, what's really interesting, she found rugby completely by accident when somebody asked if she would jump in and fill a space because we were a player down, even though she said, I don't even know how to play. They went, ah, you'll be fine. We'll figure out the basic rules and you'll be okay. But who knew that because of the way she was built, her body ended up taking her to two World Cups and becoming a World Cup champion. So understanding the strength of her body and the way that she's been built ended up being her career, I think, is such an important message. And that's why we want to share messages like that, because not a lot of people might know stories like those.
I was just going to say, you know, and we want to encourage girls to take the plunge like Rocky did and say yes. Say yes, I will give it a go. Because, you know, even if she'd hated it after that first match, at least she'd given it a try. She could say, you know what, I tried it, but it's not for me. There must be another sport out there. But so many girls at a certain age just don't want to look foolish. I mean, you know what it's like, Will. They're very self-conscious. So that's what we want to try and encourage them to do, is just to have a go. And, you know, you never know where it might take you.
The idea of rugby in particular being a very accepting sport for all shapes and sizes, and you can be any shape and size and excel at rugby, is something we've talked about on previous podcasts. But when you look at other sports and you see the role models within them, a lot of the time they are of a certain body type and a body image. Do you think we need to focus more on, it's not just promoting elite athletes, I guess, it's also just promoting the incredible, like, sporting achievements your hockey fifth 11 player has achieved? Is it about as much about giving them to be a platform to be role models as it is the elite sportswomen that are out there?
I mean, you're exactly right. That is exactly what we want to do. And we try to find stories that encapsulate everything that you've just said. You know, we want to say that no matter your background, your demographic, your ethnicity, whether you're disabled or able-bodied, you can do whatever you want to do. And we want to try and show as many girls, you know, doing sport. So I think you've just exactly hit the nail on the head. We want to say that it comes down to your PB, which Joe laughs at because I go on about it all the time, but you know, it doesn't matter what the next person is doing. If you've just run a 5K in 60 minutes and that's the best time that you've done, then that's fantastic. And next time you're just going to go out, try and shave 30 seconds off and, you know, so on and so forth, if you want to. But if you don't want to, that's also fine. You know, just do something and be active and feel the benefit of that.
I had such an interesting chat with Alex Wallace of the Mint Ridge Foundation, who was telling me that she's just getting, you know, into her running, and she makes a point of running like without Strava and all these things where it's always tracking you against your friends. Or she said, I just want to do my personal best and I just want to run my own race and I'm only competing against myself. And I just think, you know, she's a huge ambassador for what we're doing and girls and women in sport in general. But I just really love that. And I also run without my phone because I don't like the distractions, and actually I just time myself how long I've been gone. But yeah, I'm only really competing against myself.
You're listening to Sportspiel, the Players Podcast.
Interestingly, I'm someone very close to me. She loves her running, but before lockdown, she hated the idea of running with people. But then throughout lockdown, we started sort of socially distanced running together, and now she goes to like a run club and things like that. But that was something that was formed in her teens, the idea of not, you know, not liking to do exercise in front of people and that sort of thing, and it's only taken to now for that to change. Is that something that you find that an opinion or something like that that's formed in those teenage years, and that can potentially be a barrier, actually sticks around for quite a long time until you almost sort of have to do something to change it?
I completely agree. You know, we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, girls, this feeling of being good enough. And, you know, if you're going to go out and run with some other people, there's always someone that's faster than you. There might be somebody that's slower than you, but it's your own sort of self-confidence of, you know, I'm going to go and I'm going to run the best that I can and not worry about what other people are doing. But, you know, that comes from quite deep rooted inside. And sometimes that comes with age and comes with time. They say that confidence can often come with age. And that's why the more that we can share and we can talk to the girls about how they're feeling and how to manage their emotions and how to have a little bit more self-confidence and inner belief that, you know, they're doing the best that they can. And it was something that Caroline talks about a lot when we do our interviews with people is how sport makes you feel. And if it's making you feel good, that's making you feel better from the inside out, then that's going to help to build their confidence over those years that are tricky.
I mean, I think it also goes, as Joe and I have talked about before, further back than that. It goes back to primary school age when you're doing PE and, you know, you're segregated into girls and boys, which is fair enough. But then if a girl wants to cross over, say in the past, and do a boys sport, it's been really difficult for them because it's been considered a boys sport. And I totally understand that schools have got to fit in timetabling and safeguarding, and, you know, maybe they don't have, I don't know, the right equipment or whatever for them to cross over, and it gets complicated. But that's that. It can start at that age where girls start feeling like they're being unusual or behaving oddly if they want to do something that isn't theirs, you know, that isn't netball or rounders or the girls' sports. And I think it's from there as well that we've got to start making some changes as much as we can within the school system to say, to encourage girls to have a go and do something different. Because if you get into the habit of doing these things early, it won't seem so odd when you're in your teens or older to step out of your sort of comfort zone and try something different. But if you're constantly in that silo, you know, it's very hard to break out and do something different. So I think we need to almost encourage it from an early age.
Is it almost, it's not just an obviously outward change, as in like these aren't, you know, just not just turning around and saying like netball is just the girl sport, rugby is just the boy sport, that sort of thing. Is it also the change in sort of the terms used and the attitudes towards girls who do sports as well? Because I know when I was at school, I went to a very sporty school and the girls were celebrated quite a bit for being sporty, and they were given great praise by teachers, and they weren't made to feel different they weren't made to feel different because they were sporty females. But when I went to university, I encountered a lot of people who said they stopped doing sport because they were made to feel different. So is it almost a case of just changing the attitudes of teachers to stop them from unintentionally making the girls feel different?
No, I would definitely agree. And you know, I think so much has improved and changed over the last 10 years. You know, what's really nice for me as well, Will, is I have two sons. So my daughter is the eldest. I have two boys. What's really nice is that my 8-year-old son, he sees his sister doing all of this sport. And I really hope, Will, that he will grow up in a world where he doesn't think his sister can't do anything that he does. They used to do taekwondo together. They go to rugby together. They go to cricket together. The list goes on. Do you play football together? You know, they will try different sports together. And I hope that he will be that next generation where he doesn't see that there's any difference.
Yeah, and I think it's also the same with, you know, with parents and just society as a whole, if we want to get really deep. Because, you know, as soon as a toddler boy can walk, he's taken outside with a football, pretty much. And the same doesn't happen to girls. And so girls are always on the back foot when it comes to football, as an example, because boys have been playing it as long as they can toddle around. You get into a playground then, and girls maybe suddenly see it for the first time, and perhaps they want to get involved, but the boys are already running around, they're passing to each other. Okay, it might not be brilliant, but they look like they know what they're doing to a 4-year-old. So I know that might seem like an odd example using football, but it's that far back that we need to start, you know, changing the way that we think about boys and girls and sport and the fact that they can do either sport. I mean, what I'd really like to see is that a lot of girls are doing rugby and cricket and football now at school, but let's get more boys doing netball. You know, let's really mix it up a bit. And at the moment, we're still going towards those traditionally male sports, but why can't boys play netball? I mean, I know there are male netball teams, but it's not as widespread in schools as it is for girls to play traditionally boys' sports.
Just thinking back to my days, when I was at school, I did long course PE, GCSE and A-level PE, and they were mixed classes, so they were the only times that you could actually play sport with the girls. So often we'd play netball together and the girls would just end up laughing at us because we were breaking so many of the rules. Or we'd play rounders together, or we'd play softball together.
That's brilliant.
Do you think that that's maybe something that happens quite a lot in primary school because it's a lot of it's mixed. But in mixed secondary schools, you do boys' PE and you do girls' PE. You're not mixed unless you choose to do PE as one of your subjects. But do you think there could potentially be a change made in that all PE could be, or not all PE, but maybe one or two lessons a week could be mixed?
I mean, I would love for that. It sounds brilliant. I think girls' body issues might come to the fore a little bit more, but if it's just a given that that's what they're going to do from age 11 or 13 when they start at secondary school, whichever age it might be, and that's just what they're going to do and they've got to kind of get on with it, then, you know, I think it would make it much more normal. But yeah, at the moment, as you say, it's segregated.
I think change, you know, could be on the horizon. I know my son's been playing a bit of netball at school.
So he has.
His sister's like, don't worry, I'll give you some top tips. And, you know, a friend of mine, her friend is in the men's lacrosse team at uni, you know, and I used to play lacrosse and I always thought, you know, I couldn't really picture men playing lacrosse, but, you know, it's massive in sport and lacrosse is huge in general anyway. Again, another sport that's not really spoken about. I'd really like to think that things are changing a little bit. I mean, when we think about secondary school, I know my daughter's really keen to go somewhere that's got a good football for girls and for boys. Whether they mix the teams up a little bit, I don't know. We'd have to wait and see. You know, and then I think something that Caroline said that was really important is when we're writing our blogs, we have to try and think, are we writing it for the girls or are we writing it for the parents and caregivers of girls? Because at the end of the day, Will, it starts at home. Now, you said that, you know, you've got a really sporty background and it may or may not have come from your parents, but somebody encouraged you to pick up a ball or to pick up a hockey stick or whatever it might have been. Somebody encouraged you to go out there and give something a try. And that's what really want to do. And some of this is just so life-changing. I mean, we interview this amazing young girl called Ruth Fox, or Caroline interviewed her, and you know, the blog is called How Football Saved My Life. You know, she really struggled with her mental health and she's literally said that football saved her life, and we want to share stories like that. They are not in books and they are not on the shelf, but people should read about people like Ruth. And all of a sudden, was it a few weeks ago, Caroline, she was on BBC Breakfast, which yeah. is you know, fantastic. We're so pleased that we got to her first. but we want to share stories like that.
Yeah, Ruth is great. We had her on the podcast a couple of years ago and her story is amazing. And speaking about your blogs there, I mean, I've read quite a few of them over the last week or so. And anyone who's listening to this podcast, I'd encourage you to go and have a read. There's some really interesting stuff. But is there anything in particular that you've learned, or any lessons or any points that were made that really have sort of stood out in your minds at all?
So lessons that we've learned from the first time that I sat down with Caroline and she spoke about the visibility of books or magazines or girls' sport in general, you know, one of the things that we found that could be so powerful is if we come together and share our voices, we can drive change. And although it seems like, well, we're only two people, how can we try and change stuff across the world and change perception and smash stereotypes and show different sports? How can we show 100 different sports? Well, we can. And two voices can make a powerful change. And when we believe in that simple message, we think that we're just getting started. We've got so much work to do, but that's two more voices that are trying to be game changers. And, you know, the second thing is that we've learned over the last, you know, 18 months is that everything starts with this willingness to try. You know, we're huge ambassadors for helping girls with their mental health. Like Caroline said earlier, it's been hugely important through this challenging year that we've had that girls not only find a sport, hopefully, that they want to try and hopefully enjoy, but actually just for how they feel in themselves, their confidence, their inner belief, and their mental well-being. It's massively important. We have a crisis amongst our girls at the moment when it comes to their mental health, significantly more than boys. Why that is, we haven't quite got to the bottom of it, but everything that I read in the BBC news or different newspapers and articles and studies that we've read is showing that we need to do this. We need to do it now. The time is now. The diversity of sport is amazing for girls. I mean, when I tried to sign up my daughter at her local cricket club, they were full. They had a massive waiting list. Not good for me, but amazing for girls' cricket. And that's just one example of a sport. Next thing she tells me, she wants to go and do archery. Where am I supposed to go to do that? But what we also want to do is showcase some sort of glossary so we can help girls, parents, caregivers to go, take them down to their local club. I mean, hopefully you might agree, Will, but often these clubs, they say, just come down, have a free trial, see if you like it. And sometimes they need minimal equipment, might be able to get something secondhand online, whatever it might be. If we can just change one girl one day in how she feels about herself, encouraging her to try a different sport, something that she's never done, maybe we could find another Rocky Clark. You know, maybe we could find another Ruth Fox. Maybe we can just find one girl who feels so much better through the power of sport.
That willingness to try is a very interesting point there. And you mentioned there about how your daughter, you know, wanted to go and play cricket, and she has that willingness to try, but she's come across that barrier of that cricket club had too many people. And traditionally girls have had a lot of barriers. Either there aren't the facilities, or there isn't the equipment. Is that the main thing that you think stunts that willingness to try? And do you think that that's something that we really need to address, is to actually just make sure there are as many opportunities as possible, because the girls do want to do it?
I think that's a really good point. And that's one of the things that we've read about, is the accessibility to it. So are there actually equivalent girls teams to boys teams, for example? Or, you know, as in Erin's case, does she need to go and mix with the boy, you know, Joe's daughter, does she need to go and play with the boys' team? Which Erin was probably quite up for, but there'll be other girls that don't want to do that when they first rock up at a rugby club. So definitely accessibility is an issue. We know that sport can seem, elitist isn't the right word, but it can seem like an expensive pursuit. And one of the things that we're trying to demonstrate, especially with like the running blog, was just, you can just put on a pair of trainers and go for a brisk walk, go for a run, and start exercising that way. As Joe said, you can always pick up kit secondhand, but we know that people on low incomes, and you know, they're not going to prioritize necessarily sports kit. And that's something that, you know, much further down the line, we'd like to be able to work on and change in some way. You know, idea pending as to what we can do about that, but we know that that's a problem. Role models, you know, it goes back to role models being a barrier. If nobody's ever done it before, are you going to be the first? I mean, and that's a big step to take. So the willingness to try might be there, but it still takes a lot of courage and guts to actually go, I'm going to be the first. I mean, I can't imagine what now, because there's so many girls playing so many sports, but you know, it does take a lot to do that. So there are definitely, it's quite a complex problem, but yet something we all know about, you know. It's something you could ask anybody, why do you think there are fewer girls playing sport? And they'll have a reason, and it'll be a good one, you know. So it's complex, but we all know about it.
PE needs to feel like a good experience at school as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If it starts young, you know, if you have a PE teacher that believes in you and is, you know, just willing you to do your best, sometimes that can be very influential for a young child, boy or girl, really.
We've been speaking to a sports kit company actually, and they were saying that, you know, they did a survey, admittedly in independent schools, but about for girls as to what, you know, what were the barriers to them participating. And one of them was just the look of the kit and the feel of the kit, and it just didn't feel right for them. You know, it could be that they're in outdated netball skirts and, you know, they want to be in something that's more modern and contemporary. So even things like that matter. We know that kit is important because Premier League clubs and clubs throughout, you know, or the men's teams at least, they are producing new kit every year because they want to look good. They want to look contemporary. They know that their fans want to look the same. And so we should apply the same logic to girls' kit and not have them in, you know, outdated stuff if that's making them feel uncomfortable.
Is that still an issue for girls doing PE then? Because we spoke on our last regular podcast to Kate Richardson Walsh and Zoe Harrison and Justine Lucas, and they were recounting their tales of sort of when they were at school 20 years or so ago, slightly less for Zoe, but how ill-fitting and outdated their kit was and how much that potentially put a lot of girls that they went to school with off doing PE because it was just embarrassing and uncomfortable. Has that improved, or is that still an issue for girls?
So the company that we spoke to, they had done a survey with the Youth Sport Trust, and that's what they had found. I mean, particularly around sports bras, you know, they haven't really moved with the times. Girls weren't even wearing them, so they just felt really uncomfortable whilst they were doing sport. But they also talked about other kit as well, and the fact that it was, you know, I remember going to school and being in really itchy, scratchy Airtex tops, and I'm sure it's moved on from then. But if it doesn't feel good, you're not, you know, and you're worried about boys looking at you, you know, that's going to really put you off.
Make sure you follow Sportspiel on social media. Search for Sportspiel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or on LinkedIn.
Going on to something slightly different now, but the last few months of, as obviously the world has changed in a lot of ways, obviously, but one thing that's sort of come to the fore and come to the attention is of, especially at the start of lockdown, was, you know, the innovative ways people were getting active and getting involved. And at England Hockey, there was a young girl called Lily Holmes who uploaded 100 clips for 100 days of her training. And she is now
being an award now, isn't she?
Nominated for the Sunday Times Sportswoman of the Year Award. Do you think that whilst lockdown has been rubbish in so many ways, do you think that in some ways it's actually given people the opportunity to go out and try new things, obviously in a limited way, and this is probably going to be largely individual sports, but do you think it's actually given people the opportunity to go out and say, oh, it's sunny outside, I'm stuck indoors with my mum, or I'm stuck indoors with my sibling, let's get outside and let's just go and do something in the garden? And do you think this lockdown in some ways could actually have a beneficial impact for young girls and exercise?
Well, we actually wrote a blog as soon as golf courses were open, which was one of the first sports that could get going because of the way it's played. So we did an interview with a young Belgian 9-year-old player who's really, you know, at the top of her game, and also Charlie Hull, who is one of the, you know, one of the England greats when it comes to women's golf. And we were trying to, again, encourage girls to go out. Maybe they'd never gone out playing golf with their dads before or their mums before. I come from a family of golfers. It wasn't the sport for me, but, you know, it might be for somebody else. And then we were just saying, you know, go out there and give it a go. This is the time to do it. You've been cooped up for months. Just go and play 9 holes and see what you feel. See what it feels like to swing a club, and maybe you'll connect with the ball and it will be fantastic and you'll be converted. So as much as, you know, I know that's quite an extreme example compared to what you were saying about people just going out in the garden and maybe going for a walk and feeling more physically fit, but there are definitely, it is, you know, in every challenging situation, there's an opportunity, isn't there? And maybe, as you say, people have been going out more and cycling, for example, running, you know, there's been a ridiculous, I can't remember what the number is now, but like a 400% increase in the use of couch to 5K in the UK. So yeah, I think it has been good in some ways.
One of the things that we did on our Instagram is that we reached out to some professional athletes and just asked if they would share their top tips of how people can get active during lockdown. And we had some brilliant replies.
Brilliant.
And isn't it incredible how people are so reachable, really, through, you know, people might have their opinions of social media, good or bad. But we were so impressed by the replies that we would get. So Helen Glover, was it Helen Glover?
Yeah.
It was one of the first, I think, that Caroline reached out to, and she was very happy to send us a voice message that we could put out on our Instagram. Rocky Clark, obviously, was sharing her top tips for girls. And Michelle Robinson, who's a very good friend of mine, triple jump Olympic athlete. And actually, what's really nice about these tips is that you don't need any equipment. They were just giving lots of advice or top tips of how girls can stay active within their home environment. And, you know, we talked about role models earlier, but and we might think about coaches and PE teachers and how that's all really influential. But actually, we're all influencers within our own selves, and we're all role models. So, you know, for me, if my kids don't see me getting up and get moving, well, they're not going to be inspired to do that either. So one of the first things we did in lockdown is we set up an obstacle course around the garden. Now, obviously, we're really lucky to have a garden, and there are a lot of people that are in flats, apartments, and don't have the outdoor space. But it was so fun that we could just, you know, we found some logs and we were just setting up cones, and we just made an obstacle course around things that were just hanging around the garden. Of course, I came last because, you know, I'm the slowest. But hey, I'm doing it. And, you know, my husband has a brilliant phrase. He was in the army, and he always says, Joe, as long as you've got your trainers on, you've already won. And it's a statement that I've always stayed true to, because as soon as you've got your trainers on, you're in that mindset that you're gonna do something.
Which was exactly what Helen Glover's tip was. Her tip was just put your trainers on and then you're in the mindset and you are ready to go. But they all had different stuff to say, which was really good as well. From, I think, Amy Truesdale, who's a Paralympic taekwondoist. You know, she was talking about just doing 10 of something every morning, and then, you know, going up a number maybe every week. So then you start doing 15, so 10 sit-ups, then next week you do 15, following week you do 20. Maria Papworth, who's a diver, she was saying about planning it the night before and going, right, tomorrow at 3 o'clock, I'm going out for a run. So, you know, they all had really, really great tips. And as Joe says, they were very accessible. They were very easy. You didn't need a load of, you know, your own gym in the back garden. So that, yeah, it was, they were really, really good.
Speaking there about the top tips, another thing that a lot of people have been speaking about doing exercise in lockdown is the benefits of it on your mental health, on keeping fit, and on all that sort of thing. And I remember you saying at the start that a lot of girls are worried about getting sweaty and worried about how they sort of look in front of boys. Do you think that we should be almost putting more of a focus on showing them that actually, yes, that might happen, but actually you've got this and this that could happen as a result of doing physical activity? There's a few stats on your website. I think it's 68% of girls who do exercise are happy or happy with their body, and compared to 48% who aren't. So is it just about bringing those benefits out and actually saying to the girls, okay, you might feel like this, but actually you should hopefully by doing this feel this and this, which should mitigate that?
It's very rare, isn't it, that you do sport and you don't feel good afterwards. Like you have to go through that little bit of pain. And my husband will always say the same. If I do a workout, so Michelle Robinson is my personal trainer, and, you know, she pushes me hard, and I'll be tired, but, you know, we will reap the benefits. And I know that those endorphins that kick in, there's nothing quite like that. And the girls need to experience that as much as they can. It's such a great buzz, isn't it? When you feel like you've actually got your trains on and you've worked out and you've done something, whatever your PB is, whatever your personal best is that day.
But I think you've hit the nail on the head, Will, again, about what we're, you know, what we're trying to do. And as Jo alluded to earlier, when she was saying about it's how it makes you feel, that's what we want to, we kind of don't want to talk about body image, and we don't necessarily want to focus on mental health, because we know that both of those things improve. But what we want to say is, you know, when Jo's done her workout with Michelle and she's got those endorphins pumping, but she also feels like, you know what, I'm ready for the day. Mentally, I've had a break from whatever else I was doing, you know, work or children or whatever. And, I, you know, it's cleared my mind. I've had an hour to myself. You might have a PB or you might not that day, but you've still done something and you have that feeling of achievement of, you know, especially if you've conquered something and it is a PB, you know, that feeling of, wow, I did that. And that is what we want to try and show girls, is it doesn't matter. Like, get through that sweatiness and look at all these girls that have gone before you that have done that, and look at what they're achieving, be it, you know, Olympic standard or be it at grassroots level. You know, they're reaping the benefits and having that wonderful feeling at the end of the day.
It's so funny with personal trainers on Zoom now as well, because you can't escape. You know, I used to be able to try and make an excuse like, I can't get to the gym, or I'm stuck in traffic after work. And now I turn on my computer and she's just there all the time. And even when I say I've got my 8-month-old son, I'm like, Michelle, I've got Nico here. It's really tricky. She went, that's fine. We work out with Nico. I'm like, oh, no. So we have to join in. I have to lift him up. And yeah, there's just no excuses. I've tried.
Yeah, I think for all of us, it's certainly changed the way we work out quite a bit. I mean, it's been so fascinating and so interesting and inspiring hearing all about your fantastic work. And the company is still very young. It's, I believe, less than a year old since it was officially launched, but you've achieved so much already. And I guess, sort of, how excited are you for the next few months, and what can we look forward to seeing from you?
We're really excited about what the future holds. We've got some things up our sleeve that we can't quite talk about just yet, but we've got some really exciting things that are brewing for We Are Girls in Sport. We're continuing to interview some fascinating women, men, young people that were going to be on the blog. We're continuing to grow our social media, so we'd really encourage your followers to come find us on Facebook or Instagram. And yeah, lots of really exciting stuff happening. Like you say, we're still just a baby, but we're already seeing that so many athletes are already backing our campaign. And, you know, like we said earlier, we're two women with a vision and a passion that want to make change. And yeah, it's coming. Change is coming.
Yeah, sadly for us, not sadly for everybody else, we are massively creative. So we have so many ideas that sometimes we have to stop and park them for a little while. But yeah, we've got loads of ideas and loads of things that we want to do. So we're very excited.
Yeah, listening to that, I'm very excited now for what you've got to come as well. As you said, make sure everyone listening to go and check out We Are Girls in Sport across social media, check out their blogs. They're really, really interesting, and we're really excited to see what you guys have got in store for us. But thank you so much for joining us. It's been a fantastic interview, and we hope that everyone who's been listening to this has taken something away, whether it be about the willingness to try, whether it be about the benefits sport can bring. Yeah, and we really hope that this is the start of something and a big change, and that you guys can bring about.
Thank you very much, Will.
Thanks, Will. Lovely chatting to you.
Yeah.
Massive thank you to Jo and Caroline for joining us on this week's show, and I think you'll agree with me that they raised some very thought-provoking points, and they've certainly made me think differently about the ways in which I can portray women's sport and the differences I can make as an individual, and hopefully all of you can do the same as well. Make sure to give them a follow across social media. Their handles are at We Are Girls in Sport. And while you're there, please also give us a follow across Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Instagram, using the handle at SportsPeoplePod. We hope to be back with another episode for you very soon. In the meantime, at the time of recording, it is lockdown 2.0, so please make sure you're looking after yourselves, you're staying safe, and hopefully, before too long, things can start to get better for all of us.